Hello, everybody. Welcome back to For the Girls. We are here with a Monaco Grand Prix recap. But before we dive in, a very fun announcement for our Patreon members. For the very first time, you will have the ability to have your voices featured on the podcast through a site called SpeakPipe, which is linked in Patreon. You can record a voice memo that goes directly to us. And we'll be starting off by soliciting some hot takes from our Patreon members for our race preview episodes. And we'll pick a couple a week to feature, which is going to be so fun. Second very exciting announcement from last week is that we are starting a 2 times a month newsletter for For the World, our sustainability series, where we'll be giving you all the news, events, happenings at the nexus of sustainability and motorsport. So thanks to all of you who have already submitted your emails over Instagram. We have made an official sign-up page on our website linked in the description. Cannot wait for this. And special thanks to Fiona, our For the World intern, who's a climate master's student at Columbia, for helping us with this. So with that, let's get into a recap of the diamond of the season. We have a home winner. I'm Tiggy.
I'm Chessa.
And I'm Sarah. Okay, wow. What a weekend. We've said it a million times before. Saturday almost feels like race day in Monaco with how fun and exciting quali is. We were at Chessa's parents' house in New Jersey for the weekend, and we're having the most fun watching with her dad. But overall, just so happy that the curse is broken. I think it felt like an inevitability almost that Charles would win Monaco eventually, but part of me thought it would happen in like 10 years. I didn't think at all
at
that
40
it
years
was
old as the Alonso version of himself.
Exactly. Or maybe it just feels incredible that it happened so much sooner for him. And I think Ferrari under Fred Vasseur really has seen a turnaround in terms of strategy, execution. It feels like either he's running a tight ship or things have just, all the pieces have started to fall together. I love seeing Carlos being such a team player. So that was amazing. And it really just feels like we have much, much more of a season on our hands than we thought we did even two races ago.
Yeah, I think for me, just not having Max in the on podium at all and having him just be like stuck behind one person the whole race, albeit it is Monaco, so people are going to be like trailing each other. It just felt so cool and it felt so normal. Like, I'm ready for this new normal. Like, I don't want to jinx it, but it felt really amazing. And to see other teams and other drivers really be able to push and work really hard and stay ahead and drive really well. And like, we did see some passing and some accidents and things happening, you know, throughout the race in the back half of the grid. But I know Monaco's not a very exciting race, but with Saturday being really amazing and the beginning of the race being spicy as ever, I think I'm walking away from this with a W. This was a great weekend for us.
And we are not even halfway through the season.
Yeah.
The season can turn still. And I feel like, again, I also don't want to jinx it, but I feel like we are at the precipice of something very exciting with McLaren, with Ferrari.
Yeah, we're really only a third of the way through the season.
Yeah.
It's constructors show that. Like, we're getting close and it's not even – no one's pulled ahead yet.
And – the rest of the teams have a lot more wind tunnel time than Red Bull does. So this is going to be interesting, but I'm super happy. I thought the whole weekend was fantastic. Yes, the race I felt was a bit processional. If you take out the first lap and you take out the fact that Charles won, it was pretty tough in terms of on-track stuff. I think the top eight finished in the same order that they started. So that's always a bit of a bummer, but I think everything else more than made up for those facts. So happy for Charles. So happy for Ferrari. If we move to MVPs, I think I have to give mine. Obviously, I'm sure we'll all give it to Charles, but to Ferrari in general, I totally agree with you, Sarah. I think Fred Vasseur has been an incredibly welcome change to that organization. And having such great drivers, having a team and strategy that feels like it's finally coming together, like they've had the ingredients, they just haven't really been able to make it work together. So I'm so happy for them and for Ferrari. So give them my MVP.
Yeah, definitely Charles. I also can't imagine the amount of pressure, which he talked about. He said basically he was getting super emotional. You could hear him crying at the end. He said he felt that way the last two laps.
He couldn't see. He said he like could barely see out of his eyes because he was crying. Yeah, the last two laps.
He knew he had it in the bag?
No, well, he was saying the last 10 laps, he was thinking about his late father, his family, how much it meant to him. And I can't imagine, we all saw how tight and technical and narrow Monaco is, needing to, number one, hold on to your race lead. Number two, stop hitting the wall. Number three, you have so years and years and years of pressure and anticipation for this moment. I'm really impressed that he was able to pull it off, because I think that amount of pressure was unbelievable.
And yeah, what a way to start with his new race engineer too, Brian Boatsy. That's pretty crazy. Like, the first two races were a podium and a win at home for him. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
And for everyone, like, I know we talk about the Monaco curse a lot and it's like online and there's all these memes about it, but for the commentators to be like, he fully knows that like he's cursed and all of this, and for him to be able to just like not nip it in the bud, because it's been many years going, and they had this graphic and it was like the past few years, it was like DNF, did not start, fourth, sixth, and like everyone just had this like mounting pressure on him. So of course, yeah, he would be my MVP as well. You know, we have to give it to McLaren as well. Like, amazing drive for Oscar, amazing drive for Lando. Again, it was very processional, but I think the teams did a good job. But like, this was a great race for radios. Like, we were hearing every iteration of race strategy on the radio, and for the teams to be thinking through everything, and for every driver driving in Monaco and all the races in general, they're thinking about optimizing the race line, getting the car around the track, like not crashing, things like that. They're thinking about all the cars around them and being like very spatially aware. Then they're thinking about their own strategy and every million iterations that they could be going for their strategy. And then they're doing the same thing for all the other drivers, and then how could it affect them? Like, it's just unbelievable. And I think Monaco was one of those races where maybe, you know, there wasn't that much wheel-to-wheel action, but the strategy of it all was very interesting.
I totally agree. I feel like Monaco gives so much of an interesting dynamic, even when it's not overtaking. You're so right. We heard almost every single driver kind of doing tire philosophizing and strategizing on the radio. We heard Oscar saying about Charles, oh, he's not slowing down as much as I would expect. Something must be wrong. Just, it was like a chess match. And so that was really fun. And also, shout out to Carlos, because I think it felt like as soon as Charles got pole, it almost felt like Carlos was making it the priority for Charles to win and the team. And almost a lot of his radios were about Charles, like, oh, I'm worried about Oscar pushing next lap.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm worried the McLarens might get on mediums and challenge Charles. So shout out to him for being such a team player.
And for putting so much pressure on Oscar, especially at the beginning. Like, he was right in Oscar's mirrors basically the entire first many, many laps. So that was impressive. But yeah, the radio messages, I agree that Monaco doesn't deliver a lot of great wheel-to-wheel racing, but it does feel like the drivers every lap are still on the edge because it's so tight, it's so twisty. We heard so many radios for like race engineers being like, okay, like, let's save the tires, let's try to like just get it around the track like that. We heard that with George, we heard that with Charles at the end, and I feel like one small mistake, which we've seen, it can be over. So,
and last thing I'll say about this, it feels like this race for me was enough to keep Monaco on the calendar for years to come. If you're a new F1 fan, or you're just like here for F1 to watch the on-track action, like, yeah, this race is not going to seem on the surface like it's worth keeping. But we got so much out of today's race. It was fascinating.
Do you think they'll ever really get rid of it?
No.
They can't.
I don't think they would.
Not until we go, at least.
I honestly think they would make the car smaller before they got rid of Monaco.
Agreed. Or Max, and we posted this really funny video of George and Max joking in the press conference, like, haha, we should have a mandatory nap. George said we should do a lap on foot. I feel like if the pressure got too intense on the quality of racing, I think maybe they would try a different format or change the circuit.
Yeah, for sure.
But I do not think they would – they just can't get rid of it.
Nope.
Ever.
All right, how about LVPs?
Sarah, tell us how you really feel.
Kevin Magnussen.
I think he's a collective LVP for so many people.
I'm very upset that he didn't get a penalty. I get people feel like maybe Checo was moving over to the right, didn't give him enough room. But I think when you know Kevin Magnussen's driving style and just the number of incidents we see race after race after race, Checo was on the racing line, came back, stuck his nose in on the right on an extremely fast, flat out uphill where there was no opportunity for him to make a move. They were going into this like kind of slight left bender. You're in whatever, 17, 19. 18 on a dangerous tight course. It's just crazy. And it was extremely dangerous. We saw how bad of a crash it was. Three drivers out of the race, millions of dollars in damage. I think K-Mag should lose his seat.
No, I totally, totally agree. I'm going to go with Ocon. I think it was so brutal. And when you have your own team principal making comments like that about crazy. You know, like, Ocon owned it after the fact, but still, like, just to ruin that for the team and for yourself and for your team, it's just like, It's not
and
cool.
not feel – he didn't seem very apologetic.
No.
Do you think he actually posted – he did not seem apologetic at all in the interviews after. So do you all think he actually posted that genuinely or someone at the team was like, you need to post this?
Oh, and I'm sure people who don't know what coerced. It was like the apology letter for what happened. Forced, for sure.
Yeah.
To some degree. I think my LVP is a combo of the two of them. I don't want to give Checo my LVP because I think he got the short end of the stick today, but – for him to not make it to Q2 or Q3 and get out in Q1 and quali was rough.
I know. We have a lot to talk about on that.
Meanwhile, I think we have to start off our hot takes with none other than Chessa.
Okay, first of all, I think this was a good hot take weekend for everyone, but especially for me. I won my hot takes. I think this might be the first time ever. And I think since we're on the up and up now winning our hot takes, I've been saying this to Tiki and Sarah all weekend, but we need to do like a pool where every time we put in like $1 or $2 or $3 and we can keep it going because like we win a hot take every couple months. So by the time we get to it, like I could have just won a bunch of money from you guys.
Yeah, with the hottest of hot takes, Charles winning. In the Monaco
course. Yes. So I'm crazy. So but what I said was my Charles Imola win walked, so your Charles Monaco win could run. And here we are. I had a Piastri win for my hot take, so did not come true, but could have been close. So happy to see him get P2, and they were really close in quali. Could have been different if he had started first, but very happy for Charles.
I think I had Charles and McLaren podium, so also pretty good. But Chessa just takes it away this week.
That's a hole in one, baby.
I hope it doesn't get to my head. I feel so good about myself right now. Anyways, let's talk about the weekend as a whole. So we kicked off the weekend with the amazing McLaren Senna tribute liveries. And it wasn't even just the livery. The garage, all the mechanics were wearing the beautiful Brazilian flag colors of yellow and green. It was great.
The race suits, love the helmets.
Oh, it was the whole thing. I didn't even check the shoes, but probably the shoes too.
It was incredible. And we were saying that's how you do a different livery. That's how you do a special livery. Not 100%. The like fake pink or like the blue stripe on the Ferrari. Like
the remember Williams Duracell? Alpine teased camo for a second.
Yes, it was one pink tiny camo car. And there was like nothing on the car.
Yeah, we thought
this
there was going to be
a livery.
100%.
As we know, McLaren wins the marketing game day in and day out. Way to go, McLaren.
For FP1, we started off the weekend with some interesting Red Bull dynamics. Max made a comment this weekend about how Red Bull really struggles more than other cars do on bumps and curbs, which is interesting. Lots of kisses of the barriers already in FP1. There was a red flag caused by Joe. And Lewis came out on top. He said it was, quote, the best day we've had on track for Mercedes this season.
Those videos made me so happy, but I knew not to get my hopes up too high. For FP2, Leclerc was on top there. Max was complaining again about the car, and it was his turn to kiss the barriers. He said the car was bouncing, quote, like a kangaroo. Not great. And then FP3, Leclerc was on top again. Max was still saying the Red Bull was having a lot of balance problems. And this is normally where I would be like, okay, Sarah, he's sandbagging, but
not sandbagging. He was not.
For once.
Also in FP3, Bottas caused red flags. There were a lot of complaints about traffic and impeding all of the practice sessions and quali as well. There were so many complaints about traffic, which makes sense on such a narrow track, but
it felt really bad this year. And it makes me wonder if we ever get an 11th team. What are they going to do?
Yeah.
For this track in particular, it's too short. It's
shrink like the cars.
Yeah.
Reason 567 why they don't want Andretti. They're going to be like, because too much traffic
because of Monaco.
For the one race. So for Q1, it was a beautiful day out in Monaco. The ESPN and the ESPN / Sky Sports footage had all these great camera angles, the aerial shots with Monaco. It's incredibly iconic. And I have to give a shout out to Tiggy and Sarah for tolerating an entire race weekend watching with my dad.
He's so fun to watch with, though. He knows what he's talking about.
He knows what he's talking about, sure, but he's like standing up and like getting in front of the TV and pointing at all the different things. And he's like, make me a race strategist. So
he has a lot of hot takes, which we obviously appreciate.
Yeah. But again, like we talked about, there was a lot of traffic, a lot of stuff going on. The Shaw cut, which for whatever reason, I just felt compelled to be like, guys, Checo's not going to make it out of Q1 for sure. And then he didn't. Like, that was a crazy on the fly hot take that also came through. So he was the shot cut. And then we also had Alonso out, and then Sargent and both stakes Albers got cut. And then when Checo got cut, he was P18. He said, quote, what a joke. Ha. And he said he thought he would have made it through if it weren't for the traffic, which is pretty plausible, but
I think that's
come
true.
On. You're in a Red Bull. Like, come on. Maybe like the Q2 to Q1 thing. but or Q3 to Q2, but or Q2 to Q1. Wow. But
yeah, if you're in a Red Bull, you need to make it into Q3 even in traffic. You need to be like in highway traffic.
Yeah. So if he was in a Red Bull and didn't make it from Q2 to Q1, okay, maybe. But
Logan Sargeant knocked him out of Q1. That's tough for a Red Bull, regardless of traffic. For Q2, a bit less chaotic than Q1, fewer cars on track. The biggest surprise and excitement here was Gasly through. It was his first time through to Q3 this season. He was so excited. He was screaming like, let's go, let's go.
You think he would have just won the race.
I know. I was like, I was so happy for him. But yeah, it was
great. Justice for Gasly.
Justice for Gasly. Albon also made it through, which was exciting. And then we had our cuts. It was K-Mag, Stroll, Daniel Ricciardo, Hülkenberg, and Ocon.
For Q3, Max was still having car problems, particularly in turns 5 and 10. He said the car was really slippery. He hit the wall a little bit on the last flying lap. I love all of his different car descriptors when the car isn't
his radio was a gem.
I think they're so funny. And then we had what was outcome determinative for the rest of the weekend, the Charles pole, which was incredible. And then Piastri P2 and Sainz P3.
So getting into the race, overall highlights, and our radio of the week, it was an insane first lap. I think if you were going to watch the race and like think about anything that happened, it was the first lap. We had the immediate red flag. So we'll walk through kind of everything that happened because it was definitely a lot. So first, it was the Ferraris and the McLarens. Charles got a great start off the line. And then we had Sainz and Piastri racing wheel to wheel next to each other. And then they made light contact. Oscar ended up coming on top. But what happened was because of that contact, Carlos got a puncture. So he pulled off, luckily, in a runoff area. I think shout out to the Monaco runoff areas. They're always placed extremely conveniently. And then Carlos, thankfully, was kind of like able to turn the car around, limp back to the pits, which is what made him able to be there for the restart after the red flag. So if you can get the car back to the pits under your own power, don't need help restarting, you can start again or keep going. But if you need the marshals to touch your car, then you're going to be out.
Honestly, a godsend for them. I mean, even the announcers thought Carlos was out of the race. Yeah. They thought it was four cars in that first lap out. So I was amazed to see him come back and restart the race. So super great for Ferrari. Then we, of course, have to talk about Checo and the Haases. This was actually terrifying. I cannot remember the last time we've seen a car in that state. Maybe Mick's crash in Monaco. But just seeing it, just the monocoque, basically.
And one wheel.
Yeah, it was really scary. So they were going flat out up the hill to Beau Rivage. Both Haases were on either side of Checo's rear. K-Mag was at the right rear and stuck his nose in toward the right wall where there was no room, which clipped Checo, who then had a big spin, also took out Hülkenberg. And like we were saying, Checo's car was absolutely destroyed, all the wheels off, basically only the survival cell intact. And they didn't play the replay for a long time, I think just to make sure that he was okay. But thankfully, everyone was able to get out. Red Bull did confirm that Checo was fine, so very grateful to the modern safety innovations on these cars, but millions of dollars in damage on Checo's car, so really, really tough. Checo immediately walked up to Hülkenberg, and it looked like they were both complaining about K-Mag, but unclear.
And K-Mag has 10 penalty points on his license. So if he got two more, which two is usually kind of the standard for your usual causing a collision penalty, he can face a race ban. But much to my aggrievement, the stewards did not investigate further, meaning it was a racing incident. So what do you all think about this? I do think they do need to set an example in terms of penalty points. If he does cause another collision, which I'm sure he will, and gets up to 12 points, I think he should get a race.
Well, if you get enough penalty points within the 12-month period, you will get a race ban. And it's crazy that he's literally pushing so close to it and we're only a third of the way through the season. But I mean, I think initially, yeah. And like, if you're like, personally speaking, I think it was K-Mag's fault and he clipped Checo and it was just a dumb, cocky move because he had made up a few points after the start, was feeling really greedy. And that's kind of what the commentators were agreeing on overall. And then, you know, if you look at it over and over and over again, which we did because it was a red flag, we had so much time to look at it. Maybe Checo could have left a tiny bit more room. But I think if we're skewing one way, I think it was K-Mag's fault.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's also the fact that we've seen K-Mag cause a lot of incidents and issues. Yeah. So we feel like it should be a penalty. But I do wonder if it was like Daniel Ricciardo who had done this, if we would feel as strongly it should be a penalty. But I do think it was K-Mag's fault. We also haven't talked about Haas's beginning of the weekend getting disqualified from quali because their DRS, it was a technical disqualification. So they started P19 and P20, but the
DRS, they got to start though.
They did get to start, but the DRS open flap was like too large. So yikes, not good.
And Gunther posted a picture of a measuring tape to make fun of them. Like, oh, do you need help with your tape? Because you just have to measure the DRS gap when the flap's open to make sure it's in compliance.
Guess that legal battle's not going too well. So another team that was having issues was the Alpine. So at Poitiers, going into the tunnel, Gasly was minding his own business on the left side of the wall. And then Ocon went for a crazy move, essentially like kind of clipped Gasly. Gasly got under him. Ocon went fully airborne, like several feet in the air. It was kind of crazy to see. I mean, it's crazy to see F1 cars getting air in general because that's not what they're supposed to do. And so that was like a little scary bump for Ocon, but it was Ocon's fault. Gasly, of course, freaked out on the radio yelling, what did he do? What did he do? And it was crazy given that Gasly had made it to Q3, was in the running for potentially the second points of the season for the team. And we have to talk about Bruno Famin, who is the Alpine principal. He was very, very upset at Ocon. He said that Ocon's, quote, attack was unjustified and that there would be serious consequences. This was basically blasting all over the French TV airwaves during the race, almost insinuating that Ocon would be fired. It was just kind of what you don't typically see from a team principal. So definitely a lot. In the end, Ocon DNF'd, got a 5-place grid drop penalty for Montreal. But what do you guys think? I think this is trouble for Ocon, for Alpine. I don't think he's going to make it through.
Well, there's already rumors that he might be going to Haas. I guess he would kick K-Mag out. Well, Hülkenberg's also not going, but just take one menace out of the team and bring another menace into the team, which is possible. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of how much worse the season could get for Alpine. Like, I don't think they can go any lower. So
yeah, only up from here. That's what we were saying all season.
It was promising to at least see Gasly make it into Q3. So hopefully pace-wise, they're on the up. But yeah, this is not good if teammate-wise, they're struggling like this.
We're finally seeing sparks fly.
And I also think it's usually when there's teammate clashes, I think team principals and team bosses are very measured in what they say of, oh, we've talked to the drivers. We know this is unacceptable. We'll do better moving forwards. It's very unusual that the team principal puts one driver on blast and fully blames them. Just his language was so strong. Yeah. And it's a horrible mistake from him in kind of an uncertain team environment when it's a very competitive driver market for next year. You can't be doing things like wrecking your own teammate for no reason and expect to keep your job. So I think I would be shocked if he's at Alpine next year, given that type of language from the leadership.
Do you think he'll go to Haas?
I think that's possible. I also do not think K-Mag is staying, because ultimately what Haas has always been worried about and why they replaced Mick is because of unnecessary crashes and damage. Because when you're fighting for every single P9, P10 just getting points and you have budgetary constraints, you can't be doing things like wrecking a Red Bull and taking out both Haases in a race and expect to keep your job. So he's not – Hülkenberg is giving them exactly what they want, which is like a reliable, talented midfield operator. And K-Mag is not giving them that.
Yeah, which is why Hülkenberg has the Audi seat.
Yeah.
And – yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. We did a poll on Instagram with who you all think the two Haas drivers next year will be. And I think Ocon Berman won in terms of most
full
likely,
revamp,
which would be crazy. I mean, you do get a kind of more veteran driver with the new blood, which is, I think, something that Haas wants. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that is with Babbel. If I had one wish, it would be to speak every language, but sadly, I've given up hope on that and have turned my full focus to learning French. Ever since my family lived in Paris, I've been on a French learning journey, taking weekly classes, doing tutoring twice a week, listening to French podcasts daily. But the only consistent way I've been able to feel immersed and feel like I'm actually improving each day is with Babbel. It is so easy to integrate into my daily routine, learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to merchants. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve improve your pronunciation and accent, which has been a godsend for me in French. It's developed by over 200 expert linguists, and one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. To join millions of Babbel language learners across all age groups, here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/FTG. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FTG, spelled BABBEL.com/FTG. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Women's health is so important, and balanced hormones are key to that. We've been loving Hormone Harmony, an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution for women of all ages from Happy Mammoth. Hormone Harmony contains adaptogens, which are science-backed herbal extracts that help your body adapt to stressors like hormonal changes and all the things that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Happy Mammoth as a company is so incredible. It's committed to making women's lives easier, and they actually have a whole range of products to help that. Another one that we've been loving is Estro Control, which you take to help support and balance you throughout your entire cycle, and it really helps ease all of those PMS symptoms. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off of your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, and use code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today.
For the restart, so Signs got super lucky here. The restart order was for the car from the car's positions at the moment of the Haas Checo crash, which was just before Signs' puncture. So he did get to restart in P3. Everyone swapped tires during the red flag from mediums to hards or from hards to mediums. So technically, under the rules, could go to the end without a pit stop, which the announcers on F1 TV, David Coulthard, and I think I can't remember who else was on it, but was talking about how much of kind of like a glitch in the rules that is. Like, yeah, it's kind of wild that that can happen. But we did have a nice clean restart with the top five staying in order.
And then the first 15 laps, it was exciting. Charles, Oscar, and Sainz were all within a second of each other, so close. Oscar was setting a bunch of fastest laps, looking super racy. Carlos was already being a great team player, radioing in, like, I'm assuming Charles is being conservative here, but Oscar might send it next lap. And at that point, Charles started putting pedal to the metal more. He pulled out of DRS range of Oscar and built more of a 1 to 1.5 second gap, which was kind of where he stayed for a lot of the race. But as we'll get into, it was fascinating, fascinating pace management at the front. In no other race are there engineers and drivers talking about how they can go slower.
Yeah, it was what's like, we need you to go slower. Affirm. That was Russell.
Yeah, but he was like, this is my only chance. And it was true. It was his only opportunity.
And they put him on medium. So basically he could be aggressive a little bit with the mediums, but then he really, like, of all the drivers, had to focus especially hard on tire management. And it really was like a chess match on the tire strategy. So it was really fun to watch, like we've talked about, very different from other races, to see. Basically, we were getting full, like, strategic dialogues between the drivers and their engineers. So since Russell in P5 was trying to make it to the end of the race on mediums, like I just said, this was very interesting for him. And there was this radio that we said where they were telling him to drive, like, slower. And he was like, well, I this is my only time. Like, I feel like if we're just driving slower, we're poodling around. And we had to obviously Google that word. And it basically means driving or going slow with no real intention or strategy. I guess kind of how he felt, but it was very interesting. It was just the poodling.
Poodling around. Start saying that.
Charles was told to drive as slowly as possible to prevent the McLarens from building a pit window in front of George, which, again, crazy. Lots of interesting team radios with all the drivers, including Carlos, about tire strategy, like we were saying. And Oscar was wondering why Charles wasn't slowing down more. Meanwhile, Max was just kind of bopping around in P6 behind the slower moving George and just said, quote, this is really boring. I should have brought my pillow. And Carlos was just being a backup strategist for Charles the whole race. He said at one point, if Lando puts on a medium, Charles is in danger. So love the team spirit there, Carlos. This is what we want from any teammate, I think.
And there was a really funny quote from Sky Sports that basically sums up the Monaco on-track action. And it was after Max pitted and George was ahead. And as we all know, Max finished behind George. You couldn't overtake him. And they said, is track position stronger than Max Verstappen on fresh tires in a Red Bull? And the answer is resoundingly yes.
Yes.
And in the last 10 laps, I think Charles was no longer worried about pace and race management. He pulled almost 9 seconds ahead of Piastri. So again, just showing the level of self-control and and strategy that went into the whole race of how much he was conserving his pace. He won the race. I think every single person watching this race until the last corner was like, is this going to happen? Chess's dad kept being like, he could crash, he could crash.
We had Sarah- multiple messages being like, I literally could not watch. I had to watch after knowing that he had already won.
It was a weird ending because Sarah was like basically already crying at the TV. My dad is like screaming that it wasn't going to happen. And Sarah was like, shut up.
I cried when Lando won and I cried when Charles won. It just so emotional. And we'll talk about his dad as well, but just really, really amazing.
The curse was broken for Charles. We also had points for Gasly, first points of the season for Williams. And to wrap it all up, the radio of the week was, quote, tonight is going to be a big night.
Hope Jimmy's is ready, baby.
Yeah, Jimmy's
specifically at Jimmy's in Monaco.
I love that he said that over the radio. This place is going to be mobbed.
Jimmy's was like scrambling. It's like, let's Jimmy's get his table. Like,
oh God.
If anyone is there, send us updates.
Yeah, please.
Let's hope Jimmy's got his name right on the thing instead of like, congrats, Landon. Like they did in
Landon
in Miami.
All right, four teams. Red Bull. First of all, the Red Bull Energy Station where you arrive by boat looks absolutely unreal. That is where you want to be in Monaco watching the race. But tough weekend for the team overall. This is not something we have found ourselves saying barely at all on this podcast. But just seems like the car was really struggling with balance on curbs. Max and Checo were both unhappy with the car's performance. As we said, obviously Checo got wrecked by K-Mag in the race and Max was kind of puttering around in the midfield. So I don't know. What do we think about Checo? I feel like this is the more interesting discussion point. We'll see if Max bounces back. I have no doubt that he will. But Checo being out in Q1, not having a good race last weekend in Imola as well, can we call this the race 7-8 curse? Is it downhill? Are we coming back? Like, what's happening here? Is he getting re-signed?
Oh, I think it'll take a couple around race 10. I feel like I'll say something a little bit more determinative, but his fall in form comes at the worst possible timing for him because he will look great the first several races out of the gate. And then with, as we've discussed, this extremely competitive driver market, science being available, extremely desirable rookies being available, heading into the summer European swing on a downhill decline is I don't see how he can keep his seat if this continues.
So who takes the Red Bull seat if it's not Checo?
Carlos Sainz.
I don't know.
I think Checo needs to dramatically course correct next race. Like, I think if he doesn't have a top four or five, no, top four. He needs to finish like top five next race for him to be able to be not in the like down slumps of what's going to be the beginning of the end for the whole summer swing and beyond. So,
and Red Bull's patience is going to run out so much faster than in 2022 and 2023 because
when they have constructors in the bag.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Constructors is hundreds of points gap when Max is winning every single race by 20 seconds. It's a bit annoying, but it's not that big of a problem. That Checo's in P6, P7, barely making it to Q3.
Just looks bad for him, but yeah.
Yeah, if they're now in a constructor's battle and things like race management and car placement, having a teammate to fight for you are super important, they are not going to put up with this.
And the people they're competing against are some of the strongest driver pairings on the grid. You have Oscar and Lando, and you have Carlos and Charles.
Totally.
Three out of those four have already won a race this season.
I don't think Checo cares that much, though. But maybe that's a conversation for another day.
I think he cares, but it was interesting when we interviewed him saying that line of like, towards the end of my career. Like, unless he's retiring this year, I do think he cares.
I would be more surprised if he went to another team than if he retired.
Yeah, same. Where do you go from Red Bull?
Exactly. Lots to consider here. We have to see what happens with Checo. So, for Ferrari, incredible performance from the team. It seems like the curse era might be over, not only for Charles, but of course for the rest of the team. Fred Vasseur seems to be running a tight shift. Binotto's probably rolling over and just being like, damn, wish that could have been me, but it wasn't.
But maybe Binotto walked so Fred could run.
Okay, I don't think that metaphor is going to work here today. and Carlos is just such a team player. We keep saying this, but great to see. And especially for him when there's like not truly that much incentive to be a team player anymore because he won't be at the team next year. I think he's incredibly loyal to the Tifosi and the team and just wanting the best outcome for everyone. And I was really happy to see that. And there have been rumors that he might go to Williams, which I texted you guys. I was like, if Carlos goes to Williams, I'm quitting the podcast.
The only way this makes sense to me is if Nui is going to Williams. Otherwise, it just seems very strange. But we did do an Instagram poll. 73% of you said, why not the right move? 23% said that's the best option if Red Bull and Mercedes are off the table. And then 5% said it makes sense. So
I would like to hear from that 5%. But maybe we'll
I think it's the people who really believe James Vowles is going to turn the team around. Albon's obviously a strong teammate and a strong driver. And maybe, I mean, the way they started the season, we were talking about them as if they were like the next big midfield team, you know? And they've kind of had a bit of a slump since then. But yeah, I don't know.
And last thing on Charles here, Tiggy referenced this, but his dad passed away in 2017, who was a massive part of his racing career and passed away before Charles even made it into F1. And it was so sad, but so nice hearing Charles talk about his family, how much it all meant to him. That was really touching.
Yeah, not only did he and his dad dream of him making it to F1, but like to win your home race. Just
with your brother in the garage watching is incredible.
Absolute chills. For Mercedes, George had an interesting race as sort of the pivotal pit stop person. So he was probably the most discussed car. Lewis had been very happy with the car, but then was quite critical of strategy during the race, saying, quote, I told you guys about the tire choice at the start. And then, quote, why didn't you tell me to push on the outlap when Max came out ahead from the pit? So again, not much to write home about for Mercedes, but I guess at least they finished somewhere in the middle of the top 10.
I'll take it as a win. I think if Lewis felt strong, you know, leading up to the race, felt like he had a handle on the car, I feel like they're knocking it. It will come. It will come.
I'm excited. But that's the problem, is it's so unpredictable. Totally, it's like they have one window where the car works great and then they turn around and they're like, what in the world is going on? It just feels, it feels like whiplash.
It feels like the pieces will come together.
Wow.
Yeah, Tiggy, come on. I thought this was your team.
It is my team. It is my team. But it's really hard to watch this. And that's why at the beginning of the weekend, I was so excited to see Lewis so happy and complimenting the car. But I didn't really hold out that much hope for a great race because of how temperamental the car is. So,
well, one car that was not temperamental was the McLarens. They did amazing. Oscar was driving, even with some damage on from his lap one contact with Carlos. I think it was his aero package and everything looked really good, but there were still some issues with the DRS, or sorry, there were still some issues with his downforce, and he had an amazing heads down race end to end, really just keeping the pressure on Charles the entire race. And then we did have a great drive from Lando, who did literally everything he could to podium, but it wasn't in the cards for him. But again, like, this team, talk about a team that's really knocking. I think it's going to be really fun watching Ferrari and McLaren duke it out for the rest of the season.
Okay, hot takes. Who comes ahead between the two?
In Drivers' Championship?
Yeah, Oscar. The Constructors.
Between the two of them, yeah.
No, Constructors' Championship, Ferrari or McLaren?
Oh, shoot, I think it's going to be Ferrari.
Okay. I'm going to go with McLaren.
Nice.
I am also going to go with McLaren.
Oof. Okay, good job, guys. Let's go. But I do think maybe Oscar might beat Lando in the Drivers' Championship.
I think that's a hot take, but I think I would put my money on Lando still, but I would love to see them.
I mean, I'm on a roll here, so.
Oscar is just so impressive. He drives as if he's been driving for 8 years and it's his 140th Grand Prix or something. It's absolutely incredible to see. And he's so chill. He got P2
so chill
in Monaco. He's like 22 to 23 years old. And he just stands up. It's like, yeah, good day.
Happy but what we car. Were saying is we were like, please show some emotion, Oscar, for the love of God. Like,
he wasn't even sweating. He didn't even have
anyone
like,
in there.
He didn't even have the marks on his face. He looked like he just got out of the shower and blow dried his hair. I was like,
it was also so funny to see him up on the podium with like these royal Monaco people all red and then just like the green Oscar. And yellow. And Oscar just hanging
in
out.
In between Fred and the
and Charles. Yeah. So funny.
For Aston Martin, no points, sadly. It was a P11 for Alonso and a P14 for Stroll after he got a puncture, had to pit again. So definitely looking more solidly in the midfield now. For VCarb, Yuki continued his strong run of form with a P9 finish. Great for him. Danny missed the point, so definitely continuing the trend of Yuki outperforming him in the past few races.
for Williams. They got there. We did not get Lawrence. We did not get Logan points, but we got their first points of the season with Albon. Amazing drive in P9. I think it means a lot for the team with the recent struggles. And whoever, which one of you guys was talking about people having faith, to you, Tiggy, faith in James Vowles, like, of all the principals this entire weekend, he had a lot of airtime. They were talking to him all weekend. And he is quite smart and very diplomatic. And I think he could be a great leader for the team going forward. So this was very reaffirming.
For Alpine, so happy again that Gasly got P10, second points of the season for the team after the crazy start with Ocon. On the other hand, wild that Bruno Femme, as we were saying, was so openly critical of him. We already kind of talked about what we think he will do, where he will go. But Mick Schumacher is in contention for an open seat if there is one. So Bruno Femme, the team principal, confirmed that. And as a reminder, he's been racing in WEC alongside his Mercedes reserve duties. And we did another poll on Instagram on this about if we would want to see Mick in that seat. And 64% of you said, yes, you want him at Alpine. 36% of you said you want to see someone else. So going to be interesting if Mick slides in there.
For Stake Sauber, now that Williams got points, I think Stake is the only team that doesn't have points. So maybe they're the ones that only have up to go from here because it can't get worse than not having any points. And it was just a tough race in the back of the field. Nothing really they could do on this track. It was just, let's just get this race under our belt and get it over with.
But the highlight of the weekend, for me at least, when it comes to Stake, is Bottas's helmet, the Monaco Ocean Conservation focus, and partnering with Prince Albert and his foundation. Just calling a lot of attention to that and the fact that Tiffany designed the helmet. It was all just so well done. And we did do a reel on that this weekend to learn more about kind of ocean conservation and what Monaco is doing. But super interesting. Love that Bottas keeps calling attention to these things. He's a real one. So, yay.
We've already talked about Haas, but basically to sum it up, we have a double disqualification from quali due to DRS infringement and then double DNF. So just going to leave that there.
Leave that.
Literally could not get worse. Imagine like neither of you made it out of quali. Neither of you made it out.
Which is funny. I mean, now in hindsight, seeing the DRS disqualification thing, but like in quali, we were like, they are crushing it. The Haases are up there. Like, this is really great for them. They're turning it around. And then went from okay to couldn't get worse.
To not okay. Okay, standings. This is really fun. Okay, drivers' championships. We have Verstappen with 169, Leclerc at 138. So really not that far. You get 25 points for winning your race. So.
This is, we're one or two races away, potentially.
One DNF would actually have a huge, one DNF for Max would have a huge impact.
Well, and we'll talk about this. You'll see in the points, but not having Checo finish this race was huge as well for the constructors. We have Lando in P3 with 113, Sainz at 108. Checo at 107, Piastri 71, Russell 54, and onwards.
For constructors, we now have Red Bull with 276 and Ferrari with 252. So a smaller gap than the Drivers' Championship, only about 25 points. That's a couple race margin. Crazy. Then McLaren with 184, huge gap then to Mercedes with 96, Aston Martin with 44, and V-Carb with 24.
For some news, Andretti has hired Pat Simmons, F1's former chief technology officer, as executive engineering consultant. He'll be joining them in Silverstone after his gardening leave. And Andretti said, quote, I believe his expertise has been pivotal in shaping the narrative of Formula One, and his vote of confidence in joining our effort speaks volumes. So this is actually crazy. I mean, this is a big vote of confidence. And as a reminder, F1 has closed the door on them for 2026. There is an ongoing Congress probe, and there still remains the possibility of a 2028 entry with GM power units. I don't know if 2026 is in the cards, even with this probe, but they're fully operating like this is happening.
Yeah, like don't ask for permission, beg for forgiveness. Everybody's like full send.
And the fact that Pat Simmons has joined them is pretty, that speaks volumes to me.
Other news, so the Schumacher family has won legal action over a German magazine's fake AI article. That's huge. That was, I think, last year, right? And
it's horrifying.
Horrifying, and especially the whole situation that the family's in. So that's really great news for them. And then last piece of news, unsurprisingly, the FIA has decided that those funky-looking wheel covers they were testing to reduce the spray in heavy rain are not feasible. Didn't really reduce spray that much, but it's definitely an idea, an important idea, though, because spray can be so dangerous while during a race, it can cause really bad decreased visibility. It's a big safety innovation that would be really great. So they will be looking into other potential solutions. With that, thank you all for listening to our Monaco recap. We will catch you in Montreal and enjoy the time off.